I'm Smith Called Keith, and you're listening to Fuel, where sales and marketing never sounded so good. Visit thefuelpodcast.com for all our shows.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Heiler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This is Fuel.
Fuel for thought.
Fuel injected.
Fuel for your business.
Jet fuel.
You know, as we've seen with lockdown, people that built a strong organic presence before that, if they suddenly lost their marketing budget overnight, which a lot of companies did, right?
Yes.
On day one of lockdown, all our clients were like, stop. Now, those ones with, you know, the organic presence still had a business there at the end of it. They're not reliant on that paid search completely to build their business. They can use that to acquire new customers.
Welcome to Fuel, the new business podcast, and I'm your host, a Smith called Keith. Good day, one and all, to you in the world of new business and creative agencies, and it is a good day, and let me tell you why. Your favourite sales and new business show, us, Fuel, has been picked up by the fabulous Marketing Podcast Network, run by US entrepreneur Jason Falls. It's on Megaphone, which is part of Spotify. Now, when I say picked up, I don't mean dinner and a date. I mean we're on the map. The Marketing Podcast Network is, as the name suggests, a network of marketing podcasts covering all aspects of modern marketing issues with fabulous hosts including yours truly and Ian Truscott of Rockstar CMO, Tim Hines and the Marketing Starter Podcast, Jason Falls and Winfluence, Seth Goldstein and the Entrepreneur's Enigma, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital, and many, many more. Now, I'm telling you this not only because it's big for us, but mainly because it's big for you. If your passion is marketing, sales, and entrepreneurship, then consider this your open invitation to all the podcast listening you need. The Marketing Podcast Network is a veritable all-you-can-eat buffet of nourishing, enriching podcasts run by experts for experts, and you can check it out at marketingpodcasts.net. And to prove it, we've got a great show for you today. It's all about search engine marketing. So if your paid rankings are tanking and your organic's driving your manic, if your SEO is more uh-oh and your visibility is more of a pea super, then this is the show for you, a truly transatlantic blockbuster with an interview with Chris Ailey, the CEO of Honcho, one of the UK's foremost search marketing agencies. And as you'll find out, to be the king of search, you need a lot of skills in a lot of other channels to make it work. And it's all part of the big jigsaw of new business. And talking of new business, there's no better way to do this than with The Advertist, the platform that serious new business people choose every time for their creative agency. Give your agency's new business drive the best chance of success by staying on top of all the latest people moves, news, insights, tenders, mergers, acquisitions, spin-outs, MBOs, MBIs, and startups every day. The Advertist brings you critical account-winning data matched with fintech company Predictive Black's AI-driven sector financial health monitor to give you a live readout of the outlook revenue, costs and cash of 24 different sectors. The Advertist is used by the experts in new business because it delivers results time and time again, getting your agency to the front of the queue every day. Read the news before it reaches the marketing media and make that all-important first impression. Give the team a call if you're in the UK on 0203 356 3717 or just email hello@theadvertist.com for a free no-obligation trial. Now, we've no Jeremy Davis this week, so we're going to dive straight into the show. Here we go.
Stand by in three.
Part of the holistic view of new business development, we've looked at the role that creative plays, the role that pure sales play, fintech, AI, HR. But one area we've managed to steer clear of so far is the contentious world of search. And now, I've got some personal experience of this industry because I worked once for a pre-Google search algorithm company at the turn of the century that spectacularly managed to burn through £15 million in 1 year. I don't know if this reference will date me, but it was like working for a business version of KLF every month. Anyone? Just me. Okay. Terrible financial management aside, the world of search engines used to be like a Baskin-Robbins ice cream parlor. You could pick and choose between different flavors of search engine, and depending on its coding, you get different results. It was a nightmare for the nascent e-commerce market because there was no one standard. Until that was about 2002, when Google began to set the bar so high that it beat off any competition. Great, you might say. The good news is, we've all got a single supplier of search. The bad news is, we've all got a single supplier of search, and that's what we call a monopoly. And for the last 20 odd years, Google's become the standard for search. It's become part of our language. It's made fathers and grandparents irrelevant. Mums, of course, will always have a job. Now, before we meet this week's guest, let's just establish a few basic rules. You have natural search, you've got paid search. Natural is a slow, methodical science of tweaking content and visibility, strategically reviewing the language, links and code, and it's an art form. Paid search is not doing that, but buying market share and visibility through the minute-by-minute purchase of keywords and phrases that consumers and customers would use to find your products and services. Now, with over 20 years' experience in the search industry, my guest this week is eminently qualified to speak on both. Chris Ailey has worked for some of the most prolific and visible brands on the internet. He's done stints in-house at Dixon's, which later became known as Dixon's Carphone and now Currys, controlling multi-million pound budgets. He went on to launch I Think Media, one of the most high-profile SEO, PPC and social search agencies, and then rebranded that to an agency as it is now called Honcho. And if you knock about on LinkedIn, you've probably seen him or one of his team, a lively bunch of SEO wonks, the search equivalent of Boston Dynamics. So welcome to the show, the first minister of the Church of Search himself, Chris Ailey.
Oh, thank you.
I'm very well, sir. How are you?
Quite an intro. Yeah, all good, thank you. Yep.
Are you keeping
new
busy?
Year, so we're very busy at the moment. Yeah, so we can't complain. We've seen a lot of growth over the last year or so in lockdown. So that's changed things quite a bit in the agency, should we say.
Oh, fantastic.
Not quite a small business anymore. We're going through the growing pains and growing in numbers.
So you've bounced back and then some.
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah.
And before we actually kick off, I just want to just a point of order here. I believe I owe your parents a massive thank you for taking over childminding duties so you could actually come into the office and do the show. So thank you to them. I hope they didn't have to travel too far, did they?
No, not too far, mate.
Oh, right. Excellent. Okay, so let's kick off. So we're talking about search here. So, I mean, how did you start sort of become fascinated by the world of search engines?
Yeah, well, I mean, I started as a web designer originally.
Okay.
Back in 1998, 1999, so right at the beginning of it all. And I was working with a graphic designer, and we had to convince people basically this internet thing was going to work. So we would design them a website, but then obviously we had to get traffic to it, and without traffic it wasn't going to work. So that's where I sort of started dabbling with search engines. And obviously, like you say, yeah, there's two sides to it. So PPC back in those days was a thing called e-spotting, and there was Overture. And PPC back then, you literally saw what the person below you was bidding and what the person above you was bidding. So you'd just add a pence or add
literally like an auction.
Literally, it was an auction, yeah,
oh,
not
man.
Very scientific. That was before Google AdWords came along. And then, yeah, SEO, obviously, back in those days, again, Lycos, Hotbot, Ask Jeeves, all these random
searches. Oh, Ask Jeeves, there's a name.
Yeah, that's going to change the world, isn't it, before voice search. And again, back then, SEO was a bit of a dirty, bit of an easy thing. You know, it was spam keywords wherever you could, effectively, alt tags, text, title tags. And, yeah, so I've just evolved with it from the very basics, I guess, through to what it is today, to now running an agency of experts that do it.
Wow, excellent. Well, I mean, because, I mean, as you've alluded to there, I mean, I wouldn't make any sort of disparaging comments, but, you know, the world that you inhabit is somewhat like mine in the new business area in that, you know, it sometimes does struggle with its credibility and reputation. And there's obviously a lot of companies promising to get you like top results and, you know, presence.
Stay away from Amazon.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I mean, I've known Honcho or I've known you for some time, and I know that your agency takes quite a kind of scientific approach to the business. But, you know, obviously, like all internet-based business, I mean, that whole thing is always changing. I mean, do you sort of have a kind of built-in sort of research sort of function in the company? And, you know, and if so, is there a kind of golden rule to understanding search engines?
Well, I mean, we don't. Our SEO team obviously follow, you know, the algorithm updates, etc., every day. I mean, search changes by the day.
Really?
Yeah, literally. There's always new features coming out. There's an algorithm update, you know, the core update now every sort of 3 months where they refresh what they're indexing and the content they're indexing. So, yeah, it's constantly changing. And for myself as an owner of an agency, you know, it's hard to even call myself a true expert anymore because I'm not in the weeds like the other guys are every day. So the SEO team are constantly looking at what's changing and constantly adapting our strategies. We do have like a data and insight team. So they look at trends. They can look at things like natural language processing, you know, working out how people are using the internet, et cetera. Identifying trends, you know, build tools. We can work out, you know, the sort of the percentage of traffic that's going for paid and organic to a certain competitor, that sort of thing. Wow. But yeah, overall, it's just constantly following. It's constantly changing all the time.
It's it's just a sort of an hour by hour game of like whack-a-mole or something, isn't it? Just trying to stay on top of everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's very easy to get out of date very quickly.
Wow, excellent. Well, I mean, related to the sort of research and development stuff, I mean, I wanted to sort of, you know, kick off with the sort of talk about clickbait and stuff, you know, and obviously, you know, I'm trying to increase the appeal of the show, so I thought I'd use the word clickbait, you know, just to try and throw that in there. But specifically, I wanted to talk about news. I got a question about internet news, and I'm sure you're the right guy to answer this, but is there, I mean, why are we all getting suckered into this kind of tribal use of the internet because of algorithms? Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, it's like once I start reading one thing, then I see a lot more of that one thing and everything else is excluded. And we all seem, it seems to be very easy to get down a rabbit hole, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we're constantly feeding data, aren't we? That's the problem. We're constantly feeding data as to what we're looking at, how long we look at it for, you know, what interests us, etc. So I think the use of data as well can be used to manipulate, can't it? I mean, the Cambridge Analytica scandal is a prime example of how, you know, a real world can be affected by what we're showing people effectively. You know, and there's a lot of concern over how that data, but also I guess like the, you know, things like social media, yeah, I mean, the impact on mental health, for example, or, you know, what an influencer's doing can really impact how we live our lives. Everyone's living their best life on Instagram, aren't they? So, you know, it's, but the algorithms, yeah, I mean, you know, they're all designed to keep us in one place, right? So, you know, if one thing interests you, it's going to show you more things of that topic.
I mean,
keep you down that rabbit hole, basically.
So is there an antidote to the algorithm?
Well, I think we're always going to want some sort of personalised experience, aren't we, on the web? I mean, if you're just shown a load of irrelevant ads, is that a positive or a negative experience? You know, you're always going to get shown ads.
Right.
So I think algorithms are always going to be there, and the machine learning, they're all designed to, you know, make our user experience more friendly, ultimately, to help us find information faster, right?
So right.
I think algorithms will always exist. Machine learning is always going to exist. It's how much data they're taking from us is the contentious point, isn't it? I mean, it's we're always feeding them data. I mean, obviously they're scrapping third-party data, which will clean that up a bit. I mean, I think it was Harvard Business Review that did a study, for example, on ages and genders and stuff. I think like 23% of the results were correct in terms of age identification for ads.
How many percent?
So I think, you know, 23%, I believe, was correct. So, you know, a lot of this data is messy and it's not even that accurate. So I think the way the web is going, obviously, you know, with Web3, a big part of that is decentralization. And that means that basically we take that data, we own it ourselves effectively, and we could even earn from that through, you know, a currency or tokens or whatever.
Right.
But I think the way it's going to go is that, yeah, we'll get more choice over what data we provide and who we provide it to. You know, I mean, Google, they're trying with topics, if you like. So they released a thing called Google Flock, which basically based, instead of like using personal data, it was putting people into cohorts. They've now changed that to topics. And with topics, effectively, it's going to choose three topics that they think, you know, or that your web browsing history shows that are of interest to you. And you're actually going to be able to go in and choose whether you're prepared to use that topic as a signal of what ads you want to be shown or not.
It's getting more kind of sophisticated as we're going. I mean, it's just taken a bit longer than I guess we've sort of all anticipated, I suppose.
Well, I think it's taken a lot of lawsuits and things, isn't it? I think they're all, yeah. I mean, we're in a bit of a transition at the moment. You know, I mean, if you look at Facebook and Meta, for example, you know, they've signaled they're trying to build a metaverse. And you know, surely one of the main reasons for that is for them to keep hold of that data. If they own that data and you go into their metaverse, then you've got to give them data and they can then make advertising revenue from it. So I think things like Google have got to be more careful in terms of how they use that data or where they get their data from and giving you more privacy. And then there will be things like Meta, for example, that are going to try and still capture that data firsthand. I mean, first-party data is crucial anyway,
right?
Just for user experience, again, isn't it? If you go to, if you run on a website, you know, you want them to remember the fact that you can log in. You don't want to be going to a bit of paper somewhere to find your password each time. If you've checked out or not checked out, or, you know, what things you like, it improves your experience.
Sure.
So first-party data is always key.
Right, absolutely. Okay, well, that's good to hear. At least there's something better on the horizon for us. Now, as a slight diversion, as a tribute to the kind of radio shows of old, I mean, we've got the equivalent of a listener's question come in. My mate, Matt Smith, he runs a 360-degree product photography business here in Indiana called Photospherics. So quick name check for Matt there. Hello, Matt. And free advert. Now, I was telling him that you were coming on the show, and we had a conversation about rankings, which I hope you might be able to help him with, because I couldn't really, I didn't really have an answer for him. But what he's saying is, when he first started doing SEO marketing, he, like every good boy should, did a kind of mixture of natural and paid search. He tuned up his keywords and then he, you know, all the copy on his website to make sure that it kind of ticked all the boxes for a search engine. And he got into, like, as you alluded to, as you mentioned at the start, you know, keywords and phrase auctions and stuff like that. But he's noticed that in the last few months, or since the pandemic, basically, those keywords have become prohibitively expensive. I mean, like trebling in price, something like that. Now, I mean, I get it. We're all in a commercial market. And, you know, it seems like, you know, obviously the only companies that can afford those top keywords are the top 1%. Now, obviously, Google's going to want to try and make money. But, I mean, do you think they've got a kind of a moral responsibility to throttle the price, you know, to give smaller businesses the opportunity to compete? I mean, are they inflating these CPCs?
I don't think they're inflating them. I think the demand is. I mean, obviously, right. At the beginning, Google, you know, their first job was to attract advertisers to their platform, right? So over time, those keywords are going to go up. Now, when you're bidding on keywords for PPC, it's not always the highest bid wins. There's a lot of it down to quality score, the quality of your landing page. So it's still a fairly even playing field. But we've seen, CPCs have seen inflation, certainly. Lockdown definitely has seen that. We've seen that as an agency. You know, we during lockdown, we saw a lot of inquiries for the paid side of the business. People wanting quick results,
right.
Instant return, etc. Now, we're coming out of that, it's switched completely. And a lot of people now are focusing on the longer game. A lot of people now, our demand is now for organic services like SEO, content, etc. And I think that you know, the companies are now going to have to take a wider approach. They're going to have to look for other ways because, yeah, Google, are they going to reset their auction? Probably not. There's no one to compete with them, so why do they need to? They've also got...
We'll come on to that in a bit, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, and again, goes back to the fact that as a business, you know, if you look at it, they saw huge growth because their growth was all about getting more people on their platform. Well, everyone's on their platform now. So CPC is inflating and getting more money per click is the only way they're going to continue to grow, unless that, you know, someone else came into the game. Yeah.
So I mean, what would your advice to him be? I mean, I'm sure he's probably not the only one that's come to you with that kind of similar thing. Well, I mean, it's just kind of balancing out everything. Is that the easiest solution?
Well, I mean, so Google Ads is a great acquisition channel, but it's exactly that. And if you get to the point now where you're spending money and you're not getting a positive return on that, you've got to find other ways to acquire those customers. I mean, for a business like his, you know, he needs to sort of nurture an audience, if you like. So if he can build like what I call a receptive audience, which is, you know, a social following, an email subscriber list, you know, people coming to his website to catch up on his blog, build that authority through things like case studies or showing off his work. But yeah, I mean, effectively, he needs to sort of create lots more content, try and build an audience himself. A bit like us, really. You know, we don't bid on SEO agency. Our target customers aren't going to type that into Google. So we have to nurture our potential customers. And when they're ready, they knock on our door and come to us. So my advice to him would be, yeah, try and build out your organic presence. Focus on showcasing his work. Showcase on building an authority, whether that's through personal branding or his business branding, and try and build an audience to nurture effectively.
Wow. I mean, you know, this is that's real juicy stuff. That's great, Chris. Thank you. And I mean, it just goes to show how your agency has kind of evolved as well, in that, you know, I mean, you're not just there bidding on words and putting in keywords and things like that. I mean, you're offering a really kind of holistic service and sort of, you know, advising on, you know, other ways to capture an audience or thought leadership and all that sort of thing. I mean, you're a de facto marketing agency, aren't you, really?
Yeah, I mean, it stems out into things like, you know, digital PR as well.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, I mean, link building, for example, a big part of SEO. It got really dirty. It, you know, it became a really sort of controversial subject, and they've had to clean it up. And now you have to earn those links. And, you know, you don't earn those links by writing to web directories anymore and things like that. What you have to do is you have to create a story, take data again, try and create a story that journalists are going to be interested in, and then outreach to those journalists. And then if they then publish that story with a link to yourself, that's how you get those authoritative links. So you've really got to earn that, you know, those links now.
And that's digital PR, what you've just said.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, that's evolving again. And like I say, it's even the social or even campaigns now. It's not just advertise randomly. You know, you've got to think about where that audience is, what your demographic is, programmatic, things like that. You know, you can be so specific, but again, it all comes back to that data again.
Sure.
You know, to target the right customers. So as a small business, yeah, it's controversial. On one hand, we don't want to give our data away, but there's always a need for it. And again, it improves our experience and for businesses to advertise effectively.
But you know, I mean, you have to. What I'm driving at, I guess, is the fact that, I mean, you have become, you know, multidisciplined in terms just because of what you're specialising in. You know, you are sort of drawing on sort of existing skills, you know, PR and marketing and advertising and digital and all that sort of thing, in order to, you know, to build all that as part of one thing. So that's great stuff. Thank you very much for that. Now, obviously, the best, I mean, as we referred to, you know, Google having a monopoly, but and obviously the price is going up. One of the best solutions for, you know, against inflation is greater competition. And, you know, you start introducing other suppliers into the mix, you know, then obviously, you know, you start to sort of throttle the prices on these things. But, you know, as I found out in 2001, Google's a really tough nut to crack. You know, I mean, I've just did some research on it. I mean, it's like, you know, 2 trillion market valuation, and, you know, I think it's about $3,000 a share or something. And I remember one of my friends actually tipped me to buy some Google shares. I think about $50 at the time they were. So the price of those now is absolutely extraordinary. I could have retired. Yeah, I wouldn't be doing this. But I mean, do you think, are there any opportunities on the horizon for any kind of other competitors to break sort of Google's grip on the search market?
Well, I mean, it's a really tight grip.
Yes.
It's over 90%. So, you know, and it's their primary product, isn't it? So that's the thing. You can't just launch a search engine overnight and take that user base, you know, unless, you know, something different, they offered something different. So, you know, we know that Microsoft and Bing, you know, they've been trying for years and they're 5%, 20% in some topics at best, you know. The people that could compete are the giants, aren't they, ultimately? So unless there's a new way that comes out. So, you know, yeah, Bing, Microsoft, they've been trying, but ultimately their product is computers. Amazon, you know, they get more e-commerce searches than Google. You know, they're the biggest search engine for products. They own their data, but, you know, they get their customers from their data. They've got things like Alexa. Do they really need to build their own search engine to give us information? They can just use Bing like they do now. You know, and their future is probably just based more on what they're doing, selling us stuff. Apple is an interesting one. They've got a user base. Obviously, they've got iPads, iPhones, etc. Huge user base. We know that, you know, they've potentially shown an interest in search. You know, iOS use that 14 uses their own results, for example. We know they hired the head of search from Google a few years back. We know that their crawler has been crawling more websites. There's hints, but, you know, do they need to build a search engine? Will they build a search engine? They get paid billions of pounds by Google every year to use their results, but they probably could make more money, you know, through their own advertising model than what they get paid by Google. But again, without those products, you know, do they risk going their future towards building a search engine, or what happens if someone else invents the next iPad? You know,
yeah.
So they're kind of got to focus on their product too to protect that. So, yeah, it's kind of hard to find someone with the motive to do it. I think that's the key. And obviously Meta or Facebook, as we know, have kind of publicly staked their focus for the future, which is building a metaverse and a new way of using the internet. And I guess the big thing, you know, what's going to end Google potentially is a new way of finding information, isn't it? I mean, are we still going to be typing on our keyboard, typing things into a little search bar in 10, 15 years' time?
You know, yeah.
That's the big question, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's interesting that you bring that point. I just want to circle back on that for a second because, you know, obviously, the issue the thing that's actually protecting Google is the fact that everybody else's equipment is so proprietary, you know, and all their searches are so proprietary. So, you know, I mean, you know, it's all platform specific. So, and Google is, you know, across everything. So, I mean, that does actually kind of create that moat that a good business needs. And like you say, I mean, you know, so, you know, it does come down to how we're going to be looking for information in the future. And I mean, you know, if we stopped using keyboards, you know, which would be bloody fantastic as far as I'm concerned, because, you know, my eyesight's getting worse, my fingers are getting fatter, and those buttons are getting smaller. So, you know, I'm all for a bit of voice search. I mean,
Well, we thought that was the answer, didn't we? We thought that was the next big thing, but it's taken its place, but it's certainly not taken over the world in terms of search.
But do you think that's going to, what's going to be the main way to search for, let's say in 5-10 years time? I mean, what are you predicting is going to be the way to do searches?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure. I don't know is the honest answer.
Otherwise, you'd be paid millions of millions, wouldn't you?
I'd be doing it. Yeah. No, but I think where things that are wearable will be the future. I mean, Google, you know, we know they've got like their research things, and they've looked at things of implanting things in the brain and think, you know, giving us that information while we think of it and things like that. I mean, how do we feel as a human race about that? You know, not too sure. The metaverse again is like, you know, I mean, we tried it the other week. We put headsets on and had a metaverse meeting. And
oh wow!
You know, you take that off at the end of it. You wouldn't want to sit with one of those on all day long.
No.
So, you know, the technology there is too clunky. You know, might it be a pair of glasses or something? You know, we're obviously a way off of that. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. But yeah, like you say, are we still going to be using a keyboard, etc., in 10, 15 years? and beyond? Probably not. But what will we be using instead? I don't know.
It could be. It could be because I had a talk with when I was talking to Matt about this whole, you know, the whole business about searching, and he, you know, we sort of came up with this theory that it's going to be kind of depending on where you are when you're doing your search. You know, is that, you know, obviously you'll have your computer peripherals and all that, which will be your kind of main thing. But, you know, you may be driving in a car or something, and you may do a search when you're in the car, and that will have a different kind of platform that, you know, or a different search, like, you know, in the way that, you know, Alexa and Siri do at the moment, you know, that they become. So you could end up asking your fridge for various bits of.
Well, I think that, you know, we're talking about Web 3, but, you know, they're sort of saying Web 4 is basically a world that we'd live in where we don't even notice the internet, isn't it? It's just, wow. It's just one of those, you know, main things that the world needs to operate.
Like, just sits, say, in the background, everything.
Yeah, it's just in the background and you don't even think about it. You know, it just, everything evolves on it. So,
fantastic. Yeah, so, I mean, okay, so a lot of these kind of subjects are interlinked and, you know, I mean, you can't really kind of separate them. But, you know, this is a new business show, and it wouldn't be fair unless we dragged you into the debate as well for your two, Penneth. And so we just have a quick chat about, you know, sort of customer acquisitions and stuff. You know, if the solution is for companies and brands to develop a kind of workaround to the SEO auction sort of price, as you suggested, by using things like, you know, sort of content development and things like that, I mean, what do you advise your clients to bake into their strategies moving forward? I mean, is there a piece of advice that you give all your clients as to how to balance that whole thing out?
I think it's about building, like I say, content is key. You know, you've got to have this base to work from, if you like,
right,
in terms of your online presence. Acquisition, like I say, omni-channel approach is something we're seeing a lot of. You know, it's about being available on all these channels now. You know, discovery for things like social, things like that. Build your authority there, build your content on there. And you know, can you educate people, inspire them, entertain them? How do you get your presence out there? I think in terms of acquisition, you know, Google's always going to be, PPC is always going to be a great acquisition model, because, you know, you can spend X amount to make Y amount and work out if it's profitable or not.
Right.
I think the other number of channels, organic is such an investment. That's the thing. It's, you don't see an instant return, but, you know, as we've seen with lockdown, people that built a strong organic presence before that, if they suddenly lost their marketing budget overnight, which a lot of companies did, right?
Yes.
On day one of lockdown, all our clients were like, stop. Now, those ones with, you know, the organic presence still had a business there at the end of it. They're not reliant on that paid search completely to build their business. They can use that to acquire new customers. So I think a lot of it is nurturing, you know, potential customers and existing customers, looking after those existing customers as well. Is a really important point, you know?
The takeaway that I'm getting from all this is that, you know, search is just, is an absolutely sort of integrated part of everything else that you're doing for your marketing. But really, it's not just about bidding for words, and it's not just about, you know, sort of having the most optimized, you know, sort of search profile. A lot of it has to do with your credibility in the market, how you're actually working with customers, all that sort of thing. I mean, is that the kind of the sort of
well, yeah, the general, and also online, it's the quality of experience when that person does get to your website, you know. So we're seeing things like Core Web Vitals and things like that. Again, it's all about the user. So if someone comes to your website and they have an awful experience and they leave straight away, that affects what you pay on a CPC auction, and it also affects, you know, potentially what Google thinks about you from an SEO point of view.
Yeah.
If you think of Google's model, you know, they're ranking sites at the top on page one. If you have an awful experience on each of those websites, Google's not giving their users a good experience. So, you know, you've got to make sure that your website, you know, works properly, and that you know, it keeps people on there and it gives them the answer ultimately to what they're looking for.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that kind of that sums it up sort of perfectly for me, Chris. Thank you very much. I mean, so as far as Honcho and the agency is concerned, I mean, this is a chance for you to give a big old plug to the business. I mean, what's coming up for you and the business sort of in the next sort of year or two? Now your kind of freedom has been given back to you.
Well, I mean, I think a big part of it, like I say, is growing up a bit as a business. So we're up to sort of 40 staff now, which is lockdown's sort of effectively doubling size. So as a business, we had to then bring in a leadership team and you know, bring in the skills underneath that. We're looking a lot more towards sort of organic performance now. Again, tying into this, you know, it's not just SEO sitting on its own. How does SEO fall into social, to content, digital PR, etc., user experience as well, conversion rate optimization, etc. So we're trying to tie it all together in the next couple of years. Data and insight, again, is a big theme, you know, feeding that into all of our client strategies. So at the moment, the next year for us is almost regroup, if you like. Not that keen on growing too much more right now. We've grown a lot. It's now bringing everyone back together, if we can, hopefully together.
But you kind of attacked that whole pandemic as well at the same time, didn't you? I mean, you didn't hold back.
I attacked it. Yeah, no, I think it was a huge opportunity. You know, everyone suddenly had to go on to digital, you know, and a lot of brands, where obviously hospitality and things like that did suffer, retail, you know, really propelled itself forward. Things like DIY, you know, home and garden, furniture, we were buying more of it because we weren't going on holiday or going out, etc. So, you know, a lot of our clients in those fields, and even food at home, things like that, you know, we've helped those companies really scale up during that time. So that's really propelled our growth. Yeah, definitely.
No, that's great. Well, congratulations on that anyway, because I think it's, you know, fortune favours the brave. You know, I think it's it was one of those things that some people said, well, you know, we're just going to hold on and wait and see. And then, I mean, I watched it with you guys, you know, as on using just LinkedIn was just enough to see that, you know, you weren't holding back at all. So I think that's good.
I mean, for me, it was a once in a lifetime opportunity. Let's face it. I mean, in our field, digital, you know, everything was going digital. You've never had a better chance to grow an agency doing what we do than during that time. So we went for it, and luckily it paid off.
Bold move. Well done. Anyway, and if anybody listening to this wants to sort of get hold of you, I mean, what's the easiest way to reach you these days?
Well, LinkedIn probably.
Right.
So you find me on LinkedIn. I'm on there nearly every day. And again, that's a big part of our new business approach, LinkedIn, definitely. And then our website, honchosearch.com.
Honchosearch.com. Fantastic. All right. Great stuff. Okay. Well, we're coming into the last, the final furlong of the show anyway. I mean, and so this is the sort of fun bit. So you can just take a beat now and relax. You'll be fine. But I gave you three bits of homework to do. The first one was show and tell. So bringing an object in and explain its significance. Now, bearing in mind, this is primarily a podcast, so you're going to have to describe it.
Oh, no worries. All right, so what I brought in is a part of our old sign from the I Think Media sign. It's the only bit that's left. So when we rebranded to Honcho, at the same time, we remodeled our office. So we're in a beautiful bar.
I see it. It's lovely. I can see a beautiful old oak beam over your head. Fantastic.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. And then we have a stables next door. So we'd outgrown the barn and we had the stables as a separate building. And we sort of said to the landlord, we're probably going to have to move unless we can join these buildings together, because people didn't like working in separate buildings. So we connected them via almost like a conservatory, which we've now turned into a shop, almost like a shop face. And part of that was banging through our old boardroom wall, which held the I Think Media sign. So as part of our rebrand video, I literally took a sledgehammer the day the builders were here and smashed the sign and threw the wall to join the buildings together.
Fantastic. And that's the bit that survived.
Well, I've kept that. I keep it by my desk just to remind myself of sort of how far we've come, really, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. That's fantastic. And because you've got a nice new brand as well, the Honcho brand, which I see over your shoulder there. So, and on your shirt, by the way, which are... Oh, am I right? Do you sell those shirts?
We have started selling them, yeah. I mean, it was we were getting asked for them all the time, so we thought we'd build a Shopify site.
Nice, but to be into honest, the merch.
It's kind of fallen off the radar. Yeah, well, it's kind of fallen off my radar, to be honest, a little bit. It's something we might have another go at, but yeah, you can buy them, but it's certainly not a business focus. We're concentrating on the agency.
Yeah, of course. Fantastic. All right, well, good stuff. Okay, so piece of music that you recommend to everybody give a listen to.
Well, I'm sure everyone's heard it. It was a tough choice, this one.
It always is.
It always is, yeah. But I went for Tiny Dancer by Elton John, mainly because my wife, our youngest son, we had a cesarean, so we were able to choose a playlist. So one of the songs we chose on that was Tiny Dancer, and by chance, that was the song that was playing when he was actually born.
Oh, so fantastic.
So it's got a nice little connection. Yeah.
You can't go wrong with a bit of Reggie anyway, so he's always a good one. But we'll be playing that as your walk-off music anyway, so that's a good choice anyway. And it's the first time we've had Elton John on, so that'll be excellent. Finally, you're recommending a book. What book would you recommend everybody reads?
Yeah, I mean, a book that I really enjoyed reading a couple of years ago was Shoe Dog, just by Phil Knight on the story of Nike. I think it's such a brilliant story and so well told, even though you know they're going to take over the world at the end.
You know how it ends.
Such a big brand. You know, page by page, it really keeps you on tenterhooks. The story of just how that brand, you know, a guy literally selling trainers out of his boot, of his car, to literally making quite physically a mark on the world with that Nike swoosh.
Isn't that incredible?
Such a brilliant story. I mean, business-wise, though, another one that I would say is Rocket Fuel. So that really sort of ties into my own journey of the innovator and the integrator. So I'm obviously the founder of the agency. I have good vision,
yep.
And I have a million ideas always going through my head and things that we could do. But what I'm not so great at is seeing it through, I guess. So we brought in Saeed, who's my COO, who manages the day-to-day of the agency.
Good name check for Saeed as well. He's a nice guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a lovely guy. And he makes things happen. And it's just really interesting how growing a business, any business really, that room for two different characters in it, and how important that is, you know, one person to see forward and keep it going, moving forward, and the other person to make it, to integrate it all and make it work. So highly recommend that book as well.
Good stuff. And that's called Rocket Fuel.
Rocket Fuel, yeah.
Okay, all right.
I think it's in the series of Traction.
Okay, well, we'll keep an eye out for that one as well. That's great. Now, as Chris said, you can reach him through all the usual channels on the social, including LinkedIn, on his website, Honcho Search. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. HonchoSearch.com.
Excellent. And we'll put all those in the show notes on thefuelpodcast.com. That's it. Well, there you go, Chris. That was it. Welcome to the end of the show. Did you have fun?
Thank you very much. Yeah, no, it was great. Thank you very much for having me on.
You going to do it again?
I'll try.
Well, I'll tell you what, I hope this is the first of many for you, Chris, because you're a great guy to talk to, and you know, very knowledgeable on all things search. Just remains for me to say, you know, I wish you good luck, plenty of new business and health and happiness for you, your team and your family. Thanks for coming on the show, Chris, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
All the best. Chris, thank you very much for taking the time to talk. That was his first podcast appearance. Can you believe how good he was? You knocked it right out of the park, my friend. Well done. I can't let this go without at least sending my thoughts and best wishes to the free people of Ukraine. You didn't ask for this aggression, and I hope that you'll stay free because of the people's will to stay free. This is nation-building stuff, and the rest of the free world needs to stand united with the people of Ukraine and give them any help we can. You can be part of the movement too. Tweet, send messages of support, or send aid wherever and however you can. Stay free and stay safe. My thanks to Team Fuel. That's Donna Smith, Matt Smith, Jeremy Davies, Matt Bullard and Peter Banks for all the production. Please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast, and then you'll know when we've got a new show coming out. For now, this is me, a Smith called Keith, full of gratitude for your support and looking forward to my next interview on Fuel, the podcast for the new business curious. And really, shouldn't that include you? Simon Smith called Keith, and you're listening to Fuel, where sales and marketing never sounded so good. Visit thefuelpodcast.com for all our shows.